Radio Network at ParanormalKing.com.
Welcome to the Paranormal News Insider for the week of May 14th, 2019. And this is officially episode number 394. And this is your host, Dr. Brian D. Parsons. And we are live on the Paranormal King Radio Network at ParanormalKing.com. And, I wasn't going to lead off with this, but it's kind of big news. And I know a lot of people are talking about it. All throughout the internet, and it's still kind of fresh, and a lot of people are still kind of absorbing all this. I know myself, I'd heard rumors, and I just tried not to think about it, and confirmed earlier today, just really actually a few hours ago. So big news. I'm going to lead off the show talking about UFO news, the big news in the UFO field, very sad news. Rumor had circulated a little bit late last night, but earlier today, it was confirmed by his daughter, Melissa, that nuclear physicist and longtime UFO speaker and author Stanton Terry Friedman has passed away at age 84. And everybody in the UFO field knows who Stanton Friedman is, and many people out there I've been blessed to have met him or talked to him in some form or fashion. And I know for myself, I never met the guy, but I was able to interview him and talk to him a few times. And what a down-to-earth guy. And the UFO field is really going to miss his voice and his viewpoints on UFOs and his tenacity to get to the truth. Friedman had been on the lecture circuit since 1967 and was a leader in getting the Roswell incident to become a household name. If it wasn't for him, it probably wouldn't be as popular as it is right now. He first got interested in UFOs by reading the book The Report on Unidentified Flying Objects by Air Force Captain Edward J. Ruppelt way back in 1958. And reading that book, he was curious about the subject, and Ruppelt had led the Project Blue Book. So, hey, what a better person to try to figure out what's going on with that than that. And he got involved in a couple of now defunct UFO organizations and continued to read about it. And, yeah, ultimately, 1967 started talking about it, and the rest is history. And since then, he's lectured at over 600 colleges, 100 professional groups in 50 U.S. states, 9 Canadian provinces, and 16 other countries. And I know from experience, he's also a favorite guest of many podcast hosts out there who I'm sure are also grieving over his loss. He's an awesome guest, an awesome person to have on your show because he will just talk and talk and talk. And it's never a dull moment talking with Stanton. And I remember Stanton talking about a while ago he planned on pulling back his appearances, but he was planning on making it to a few events this year, including the 50th anniversary symposium for the Mutual UFO Network this July. And I know it was confirmed he was coming home to from an event here where I reside in Ohio from I don't know the name of the event, but he was headed back to Fredericton, Canada. So he was on his way home from an event, and I guess that kind of really wraps up his life. I mean, it's a sad moment for the UFO field, and you know he's a big voice out there in more ways than one, and I know. You know, a lot of people really enjoyed listening to him and his thoughts and his ideas and what he brought to the table as far as his beliefs and his views on that. As anyone who's ever talked to the guy, they can attest, he was a genuine man who was very, very passionate about his works and his beliefs, and certainly could carry a show for as long as you would give him time for. And yes, Stanton Friedman has passed away at age 84, and the UFO field has certainly lost a shining star. As far as books, a question in the chat room. How many books? Well, I have Flying Saucers and Science from Stanton Friedman. I know he was a part of a couple of other books, but I don't think he had 20 books. I know he wrote a lot of papers on UFOs, a lot of stuff that was in MUFON that I've read over the years, a few journals that I have. Old journals, even before I even joined MUFON, and saved some of his articles, as well as some other people in the UFO field that I really enjoy reading their writing. And yes, he'll definitely be missed. And you just kind of wonder, anytime we lose a prominent voice in any one of these fields, you wonder, how is that field going to suffer? How is it going to move forward without some of these big name people, people who have driven the belief factor and been out there in the media. I mean, Stanton's been on a lot of prominent radio shows, a lot of prominent television shows. Really pushes his thoughts and ideas, and he's really a scientist, with the background as a nuclear physicist. And a lot of people don't take him seriously outside of the UFO field, and that's fine. I don't think they take a lot of us serious for anything, but another question about MUFON. Well, he did, but he didn't support MUFON. He kind of had a little bit of a love-hate relationship with them, but he did really enjoy speaking at their symposiums and has spoken there more than anyone else at this point in time. So I know other organizations he was not so fond of, such as SETI, the Search for Extraterrestrial Intelligence, which he frequently referred to as the silly effort to investigate. But MUFON, I think he was pretty close with MUFON. I think he just wanted more out of them, wanted them to do more, I guess. But I don't think there was any kind of strain between the two of them. But again, he was slated to speak at I think it was July 26th or the 29th this year at their 50th anniversary symposium, and that's just. That's going to be heartbreaking, for that organization to have to, instead of having him as one of the speakers there, that, they're going to say goodbye. Very sad news this week. And, it hits hard because, for me, I talked to the guy and he was very genuine, very down to earth, which is kind of a weird thing to say about a guy who talks about UFOs. But he was, and he will definitely be missed. And we also, this week, we're going to talk about Bigfoot. Lots of Bigfoot. Not Big Feet, just Bigfoot. Where to find Bigfoot on television. We're going to talk about 10 scary monsters from around the world. And the Loch Ness Monster, somebody might have found the truth about it. So we're going to talk about that. And some guy claims that he was attacked by a Sasquatch. Again, another one. This time with an axe. That's pretty cool. That's a new one. Usually we've had certain kinds of assaults, but never an axe. So that's going to be an interesting story. And we'll also talk about NASA. Yeah, they messed up. In case you didn't hear about this, they accidentally destroyed a very major metropolitan city trying to save another one. Yeah, they blew up New York City. Wasn't in the news. But you'll hear about it today. They were trying to save Denver. They kind of messed up. But we'll talk about that toward the end of the show. And, gosh, I'm upset about a lot of stuff today. My websites, all of my websites, including ParanewsInsider.com, are currently down. I paid the bills. I don't know what's going on. Apparently, my internet host is down. So all of my websites are down, including ParanewsInsider.com. But you can still find archives of the show at pni.podbean.com until I can figure out how to bring my other things back. I don't know what's going on with those guys. Haven't been able to get a hold of anybody. Frustrating. stuff. I don't like when my stuff is down, but bills are paid. I don't know what's going on. Anyway, you can also find me through social media, Facebook at Paranews Insider. So facebook.com/Paranews Insider. I don't really spend too much time on there anymore. I don't know why. I just kind of move around, moving out of there. Twitter. Let's see. Twitter at Paranews Insider, and Paranormal News Insider is also on Instagram. I don't do too much there yet. When I go to events, I'll definitely be taking photographs and be talking about some of the places that I visit and maybe some of the places that I visit that have made the news as well. So keep an eye on the Instagram. And yes, Google Plus. Well, can't access that anymore. That's gone. That's going to be the big joke in a few years. People talking about, yeah, I used to have a Google Plus page. Kind of like the MySpace. Does anybody remember that? Probably not. Hopefully not. That was horrible. So I don't have my page updated at paranewsinsider.com because I can't access it. And I know I had some dates that I had to cross off there, but I'll get that updated as soon as I can log back in, whenever that site comes back up, and I'll be able to update all that information for you guys and talk about what was on there. I do have an archive of that, but anyway, hopefully I'll get that back up going pretty soon. And it's already the middle of May, so a lot of the these events are in full swing. They're headed. And we had a whole bunch at the beginning of May. May is usually like the unofficial kickoff. Early May, just like late May, Memorial Day here in the United States is the big kickoff for summer. It's the official, unofficial date. Officially the unofficial date for the beginning of summer. And June, yes, June, everyone's complaining. We're talking about it on the chat room. Everyone's complaining about being cold and wet and rainy and all this stuff. But you know, in a couple of weeks, people are going to be complaining about how hot it is. And they'll say, I can't wait till fall. Shame on you. I can't wait for summer. Excited about this. One event I do want to talk about. Actually, I got about three. And you guys know how this goes. The Summer Haunt Fest 2019 taking place June 21st in Cayuga, Indiana. At the Willow's Weep House, you're going to have John Zaffis, David Weatherly, Dave Spinks, and more. That sounds like quite the lineup right there. You can check out the event site on Facebook for Summer Haunt Fest 2019. If you're anywhere in the Indiana area, the western Indiana area, I guess that would be Illinois, thereabouts, and pretty cool stuff. I know, really weird. So I'm originally from Muncie, Indiana, which is famous for a movie. If you've seen Close Encounters of the Third Kind, the beginning of that movie actually takes place there. But all these, lately there's been a lot of references to this. I saw one, an old, from season 2, I think, or 3 of Supernatural. They were in Muncie, Indiana, and then I just saw Marvel's Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. the other night was in Muncie, Indiana. Really weird stuff. I don't know. Starting to think something's up with that. Anyway, other events, the big event coming up at the end of the month, the PA Bigfoot Camping Adventure, May 31st through June 2nd. You're going to get tired of hearing me. If you're not already tired about me talking about this, I'm going to still talk about it for the next few weeks, including the week after it's over. It's going to be a major event, a big event, probably one of the biggest events on the East Coast, not just this year, but in the last few years, as far as Bigfoot-type stuff goes and cryptozoology. It's a big deal, and unfortunately, if you've not gotten your tickets, you're too late. The event is officially sold out, and it's going to be packed. Packed. Lots of people are going to be at this event. It's 12 and a half speakers, including myself, Stan Gordon, who's a very big fixture there in Western Pennsylvania UFO and Bigfoot culture. Steve Coles, the Squatch detective. Dave Dragason, Jay and Blake Bachochin. That's why there's a half. Jay's son Blake will be joining him. Rosemary Ellen Guiley, David Weatherly, Seth Breedlove, Dave Spinks, Ron Murphy, Paul G. Johnson, and Rick Fisher. And big congratulations to Ron Murphy. Just got engaged a couple of days ago, so congratulations to him. That's your speakers, but there's also going to be celebrity guests. Cliff Berrickman, you know who that guy is, right? Finding Bigfoot. Dr. Jeff Meldrum, sure you know who that guy is. Ken Gerhard, the Ames team from the Mountain Monsters television show, as well as Bill Brock will be in attendance. That's pretty cool. There's also going to be tons of vendors. Jimmy and Diane Trick will be there. I know Phantoms and Monsters, 40 Research's own, Lon Strickler, Butch Witkowski, and Sean Forker. They'll all three be there. Looking forward to seeing those guys and hanging out with them again. It's been a while. Walt the Music Man Shrum, who's got plenty of songs about Bigfoot. I've actually been in a couple of his videos that he shot there live on location at the PA Bigfoot Camping Adventures in years past. And we weren't drunk either. It was pretty sober. And we were dancing. Line dancing. Well, not really line dancing. I guess kicking our feet and all that stuff. It was a lot of fun. So many people are going to be there. It's going to be incredible. There's also going to be a Bigfoot chainsaw carver. Lots of music. Hikes. We're going to be doing night hikes and day hikes. Friday and Saturday. Saturday morning, probably Saturday night, Sunday. It's going to be just an incredible event. And unfortunately, if you didn't get your tickets, you're not going to be there. You're going to have to hear about it from everybody else. I've not seen Finding Jay yet. He's not shared it with me. I know you can get the DVD. I don't think it's officially out yet, but I know some people have previewed it. Apparently, I'm not as good of a friend that I thought I was with Jay, but I'm looking forward to seeing it no matter what. I can't wait for it. Jay's a really good guy, really good researcher, and I know, and he's awesome with the filming and stuff, and is I've used some of his graphics for some of my websites. Thank you, Jay. Chum Bucket Studios. And he's an awesome researcher, just very down-to-earth guy, and I can't wait to see this. Now, I might be in it. I don't know. Anyway, looking forward to that event. And I got a lot of other stuff I'll be talking about. Got another UFO event coming up here in Ohio, Circleville, Ohio. Going to talk about UFOs. And they're actually having a UFO and Aliens Week at the library. That's at the end of June, June 24th. And got one coming in October. I don't know what I'm going to be talking about. Westerville Public Library, my 11th consecutive year at that event, or that location. Looking forward to that. But anyway, we'll talk more about all that stuff later. What are we talking about Halloween for? It's only middle of May. Granted, the next thing you know, it's going to be July or October. And, Anyway, let's move into cryptid news. There's a lot of cryptid news this week. It was kind of overwhelming. And there's a few stories I didn't even talk about, or I won't talk about. Maybe I'll talk about them. And we'll see what kind of time we got. Cryptid news this week. Several articles. You've probably seen this. All over the place. Here in the United States, focusing on data of Bigfoot sightings provided by the Bigfoot Field Researchers Organization, also known as BFRO, along with the Travel Channel. And the best 8 places to see Bigfoot right now was the title of an article published back in March, March 29th to be exact, which I covered in the April 9th episode of the Paranormal News Insider. And it had the state of Washington at number 1 with 2,032 sightings. California was number 2 with 1,697 sightings. Pennsylvania next with 1,340. Michigan then with 1,131. State of New York had 1,068 sightings. Ohio had 1,042. And Oregon had 1,009 sightings. And Texas bringing up the rear with 806. I thought everything was bigger in Texas. Apparently not the Bigfoot numbers. Yeah, they that story is getting a little bit more push right now for some reason. And lots of states have talked about where their state ranks in all these Bigfoot sightings. I know Pennsylvania had a story. Indiana had one. Ohio had one. Pennsylvania. I think Michigan had one. I think even California had an article talking about all these numbers. And the this article, as well as some of the other ones, was to hype up the new series on the Travel Channel called In Search of Monsters. I don't know if you saw this or not. It's been on for a few weeks now. It made its debut back on April 3rd. I can't remember if I talked about it. That's why I threw it back in here again this week with an episode titled Bigfoot. Seems like it's getting a lot of traction, so I figured I'd bring it back up again. These shows then, the topic shifted to the water the following week with an episode titled The Loch Ness Monster. In Search of Monsters then had Mothman, the Jersey Devil, the Wendigo, Yeti, the Beast of Bray Road, and Chupacabra. And the Yeti episode will debut tomorrow, May 15th at 9 p.m. Eastern, 8 p.m. Central. And watch for the Beast of Bray Road. That's going to debut on May 22nd. And I remember I mentioned my good old buddy, old pal, Jay Bachochin. Well, he's going to be featured in that episode of the Beast of Bray Road next Wednesday. And he lives pretty close to that. He lives in Wisconsin, so he lives a little ways away from that. But he frequently visits that location, that road, and hangs out there looking for a big dog, I guess. But the Travel Channel will also debut another cryptozoological show this fall with a series called Bigfoot in America. The show will premiere on Wednesday, August 29th at 10 p.m. Eastern with the first episode titled Brush with Bigfoot. This episode will cover the sheep squatch from Kentucky. If you've not heard of that one, that's a really interesting creature. We'll also talk about other more traditional sightings of Bigfoot across the United States. And so far, I only see three episodes, but it's still interesting to see how the cryptozoology field is back on television. It's back. And it's getting a lot of press, a lot of media attention since the show Finding Bigfoot. Finding Bigfoot went dark over 2 years ago. I can't believe it's been 2 years. It doesn't seem like that long. Wow. Interesting stuff. Anyway. Not to be outdone, but the Sci-Fi Channel recently released a story about cryptids. I guess they're just trying to get into the mix here. This one was titled, 10 Monsters from Around the World That Will Terrify You. This list had some really interesting creatures from around the world, and it actually bypassed some of the traditional ones like Bigfoot and Chupacabra on purpose, because it wanted to kind of dig deep in the barrel of weirdness of monsters that are more mythological or kind of legendary, more so than realistic. Well, most of them. Let's see. They had the tassel worm from Austria and Switzerland, also known as the lindworm, Erasus, or the dazzle worm. I know this doesn't sound very exciting, but trust me, you see a picture of this dude, he's a little scary. So it's a dragon. So imagine a dragon with the head of a cat. That's spooky. So a dragon with the head of a cat that grew up to 6 feet in size that hunted humans. And if that's not scary enough, this creature is also purported to spit poisonous flames. not something that I want to meet in the woods when I'm hiking in Switzerland with my Swiss Army knife. That's for sure. Also on the list was the Jurogumo from Japan. The Jurogumo was a man-eating spider that lured men to their death by disguising itself as a beautiful woman. Sounds kind of like a mermaid, if you ask me. It just doesn't sound like it looks like one. A spider? Or a siren, I guess, like that coffee that people drink. Can't believe people drink that stuff. It's got a thing that kills people on it. Yikes. Anyway, El Hombre Caiman is from Colombia. It is also known as the Alligator Man. It's kind of a cheap translation of El Hombre Caiman. The Alligator Man is a mythological creature based on the story of a man who fell in love with a woman whose father did not approve of their relationship. Sounds like half the story of my life right there. The man visited the woman every day at her father's restaurant and would sneak out and swim with her in the ocean. Eventually, it's said that he became an alligator. I guess that happens to your skin when you're in the water too much. And the couple swam off together happily ever after. I know they probably drowned. But it's also said that he continues to swim along the coast looking for women to take as a bride again. Well, I guess he didn't love her that much then. If he's cheating on her, or looking for, you know, rolling the coast with his gator tail, cruising for... Well, anyway, we'll just keep it right there. The lone entry from the United States. All these creatures, well, granted, it's only 10, but they're all from all over the place. Like I mentioned, Japan and Colombia and Switzerland and Austria. But the lone entry from the United States... All the creatures that you could have chosen, you took the Snallygaster. Yes, the Snallygaster sounds like a roller coaster, but it's not. It's a legendary creature centered near Frederick, Maryland. And the Snallygaster is a giant half-bird, half-reptile. So if that doesn't sound weird enough, it's also got tentacles coming from its mouth. Tentacles coming from its mouth. Kind of sounds like Pirates of the Caribbean, the one character. Anyway, this legend was so strong that it's said that Theodore Roosevelt himself went hunting for one of these Snallygasters. So people actually thought this thing was real. And legends will do that sometimes. They'll become bigger than reality. And people will believe in them. You can check out the rest of the list, which also includes the infamous Mongolian death worm, one of my favorite creatures. One I'd definitely go search for if I ever made it to Mongolia. You can check out that list at sci-fi.com. And it's not sci-fi like you think. It's syfy.com. Sci-fi? That's how I should pronounce it. But I do also have a link for you if you're in your chat room there. Throw it in the chat room gently. Gently. I don't want to harm anyone. Can't have that on my conscience. But got all these links. And if you're not in the chat room, you're not live, don't worry, because throughout the week I will be sharing all of these stories and links thereof via social media, my aforementioned Facebook, Twitter. And that's it. Probably not going to share much through Instagram. Unless I do have pictures of some of this stuff, which maybe I might. We'll find out. We'll see. So that's your creatures. Thank you, Sci-Fi, for the story. Trying to jump on the cryptid bandwagon, which seems to be rolling pretty heavily right now. I don't know why. It just seems like it's really rolling along, and people are really starting to... I really fall in love with these creatures all over the world, and even the beloved Loch Ness Monster from Scotland. Well, Steve Feltham, gave up his job, his house, and even left his girlfriend, all based in Southwest England at the time, And he just pulled up the stakes and traveled to Loch Ness in northern Scotland to look for the Loch Ness Monster on a full-time basis. Hope it was worth it. Leaving your job, your house, and saying adios to your girlfriend, that's quite serious. And that's a serious commitment there, looking for the Loch Ness Monster. Well, Steve had some very interesting news to share to the world last Thursday, as he claims he now knows what the Loch Ness Monster could potentially be. So he called together some people, had a little press conference, I guess, and he spilled the beans. Well, not really beans. So what do you think? Plesiosaur? No. Not in his opinion, anyway. I don't think so either. I think they're long gone. And they were cold-blooded anyway. well, Feltham believes the Loch Ness Monster was nothing more, or is nothing more, than a catfish. I know, sounds crazy. Sounds ridiculous. But a Wells catfish. Wells catfish live in Europe and are introduced to many waterways as far back as the Victorian era for sport fishing. And, I live pretty close to Lake Erie. I've done a little bit of fishing over the years and lots of rivers. And you know, we got some pretty decent sized fish. I love catfish. Wow, little Zatarain's on a catfish. Fry them up. Some hush puppies. Yummy, yummy. Good stuff. Anyway, a Wells catfish, however, not your typical catfish. They grow up to about 5 meters. You know, I got some European, Canadian listeners, so I got to, you know, throw in the meter thing here. Or 16 feet for my American friends. And they weigh as much as 300 kilograms, which is about 660 pounds. That's a lot of catfish. Now, those are extreme lengths and weights there. But Feltham commented, he said, quote, I have to be honest. I just don't think that Nessie is a prehistoric monster. What a lot of people have reported seeing would fit in with the description of the catfish with its long, curved back. Okay, unquote. I'm not sure about that. I mean, yeah, people have seen a giant long creature, but a catfish? I mean, yeah, a catfish is long and flat and everything, and I don't know. It's possible, maybe, that some of the sightings are in fact caused by a Wells catfish, but I would think that most of the sightings are probably caused by misperception of natural phenomena, such as wind and waves and maybe even other animals sighted in the water. You know, deer swimming across the loch, maybe otters, maybe seals, just kind of misinterpreted. And if you've ever really seen pictures of Loch Ness or been to Loch Ness, even better, it's very steep sides looking down a long, thin piece of water. It's kind of like a river, almost, in some regard. So it's really, it acts very differently than any kind of body of water that you're used to. And sometimes the wind will affect it in strange, strange ways, especially rolling down the hills and hitting that body of water near the center of it can cause what looks like something struggling in the water. You know, long, thin set of waves, kind of like a wake of a boat. And it happens a lot, and people think, oh my gosh, there it is. There's the Loch Ness Monster. But really, in fact, you're just seeing the results of wind. Because, of course, you can't see the wind. You can only see what the wind affects. So, you know, this is striking, because here's this guy who's been investigating the Loch Ness Monster for quite a long time. I forget what year. I didn't write down the year. It's been a while. It's been like 20-some-odd years or 30-some-odd years, I think. I forget. But he's been doing this for quite a while. So you would think an expert like this, somebody who's been searching for it for a long time, has given up. That, you know, maybe there's nothing to this now. You know, maybe the Loch Ness Monster doesn't exist. So maybe people will stop believing in it, right? Because of this story. Probably not. I'm going to say probably not. He's got his own website. So he's been looking for it full-time since 1991. Now he's a catfish fisherman, I guess. NessieHunter.co.uk is his official website. And he's got a store, so maybe he makes some money on the store. I don't know. He's retired? I don't know. Well, he left everything behind in 1991. And, I don't know. He's got a long About Me story. I'm not going to read all that. But, yeah, he arrived on June 19th, 1991. Interesting. Anyway, you could check that out for yourself. And, I don't know. How does he pay bills? I don't know. It's on the media a lot. I don't know. Anyway, we're going to move back from Scotland. We're going to come back to the United States here. We're going to go to Oregon, so the West Coast. We talk a little Bigfoot. First, I'll throw that Reuters story in the chat room about the Loch Ness Monster there. He ruined it. Ruined it. I think people are going to stop believing. You know, I always say don't stop believing, but I don't think this is going to change anything. There's been a lot of stories out, you know, in the last, 10 years since I've been doing this show about things that have explained what the Loch Ness Monster could be, as well as some really interesting proof that the Loch Ness Monster, of what we think it is since the 1930s, may not even exist. Very fact-filled information put forth, but it still didn't even do a dent. People still believe in this blindly, and I don't think that's ever going to go away. I think it's always going to be something that people believe in, and we're never going to ruin that, never going to take that away. Yeah, I mean, the Loch Ness Monster, it's ingrained, just pretty much like the Bigfoot is here in the United States. I don't think it's ever going to go away unless we have a massive forest fire that burns all the woods down. And we can see from New York City all the way to the California coast. That would be kind of weird. You're not going to see any people not believe in Bigfoot. It's always going to be around, at least for now. Just for now. I don't see anything that's going to change that. Same thing with the Loch Ness Monster. So one more story here about Bigfoot. And this is pretty serious stuff here. So this story surrounds Bigfoot, a 911 call, it's not the first time we've talked about that, and an axe, which I don't remember the last time I had a Bigfoot story with an axe. So this sounds exciting. It sounds scary, a little nervous, but let me also add, there's also a little bit of alcohol involved as well. Not on my part. I don't drink during the show. Maybe at the end of it. But definitely not during the show. 911. So 911 was called to dispatchers last Wednesday afternoon in Klamath County, Oregon. An Oregon man. Oregon? I don't know. An Oregon man centered on him, stating he was being attacked by a man with an axe. Got time to make a call. I mean, put the phone down. Grab a weapon. Grab a stick. Well, I guess a stick wouldn't do you much good against an axe. Anyway, Klamath County Deputy District Attorney Cole Chase stated of this particular individual phone call. He said, quote, "The caller was not providing a lot of information and was threatening, rude, and abusive to 911 dispatchers, but the officers still responded quickly, unquote. So that kind of tells you a little bit more about this story. And officers did respond at high speed to find the caller, Timothy Drennan, pretty much drunk and very verbally abusive, and ultimately stated that it wasn't a man that attacked him, but it was a Sasquatch that was attacking him with an axe. Not Axe body spray, an actual axe. But Drennan was arrested due to making verbal threats at the scene and was charged with misuse of 911 and initiating a false report. According to the article published by KOBI, an NBC-affiliated television station, they said, quote, the deputy DA says he can't comment on any evidence that may be presented in court, though he added an important observation. Quote, upon a subsequent investigation, there were no signs that Sasquatch was present. Unquote. So I don't know if that was tongue-in-cheek. I mean, I didn't hear it. I didn't hear any audio. So I don't know if they were smiling or laughing when they said that, or they maybe took the threat as maybe semi-serious, and they looked around to see if they found any footprints. I don't know how serious that statement was made. It's probably not very serious. Some people are already chiming in. I don't know if they're serious either, saying that this is a cover-up, that maybe Sasquatch was really there, and this brave man fought him off while he was trying to sober up. Or maybe they planted alcohol on him. I don't know. I don't think it's a conspiracy theory. I think the guy was just drunk. And I don't know who attacked him. There's not a whole lot of information out there about this story. It's just kind of weird. And I'm all about weird. That's why I wanted to talk about this. And we'll see what happens to this when he goes to court. I'm sure the arrest warrant will, or the arrest information will be made public pretty soon. And we could find out what really happened. Now, they don't think drugs were involved at all, which is would have been one of the first things I would have thought of. But apparently just alcohol. I mean, I'll have what he's having. It's that good. Yeah. Anyway, that's your cryptid news. Most of the entire Paranormal News Insider tonight, just cryptid news. And granted, we did start off the show, in case you came in a little late. We did talk about the very large loss that just happened yesterday, last night. Stanton Friedman passed away at the age of 84. Has been a fixture since 1967 in the UFO lecture circuit. So definitely the backbone of UFO speaking, and you know, a lot of these podcast shows, and he's been on TV a lot, so he's certainly the face and voice of the UFO field. I really feel he's, you know, and he kept it up right to the end, too. And like I mentioned at the top of the show, that he had talked a lot about potentially retiring from the circuit and not traveling as much and cutting back, which I think he did cut back quite a bit. But it's interesting to note that he was on his way home from a speaking engagement when he passed away. Still don't have any information as to how he passed away, but I mean, 84 years old. So more than likely just natural causes at this point. And not really worried about that. It's just, you know, thoughts and prayers are with his family. And his daughter, Melissa, was the one that passed that information on to the general public. And, you know, our thoughts should be with her and Stanton's family through this loss, and certainly will affect the UFO field moving forward. And really, in my opinion, the UFO field really cannot afford to lose any voices. I think it's really struggling. There's a lot of people jockeying for attention in this field, and it's not all good. And it's really sad, because Stanton As crazy as he could be sometimes with some of his outlandish thoughts and theories, I was pretty grounded overall with a lot of his thoughts and theories and who he was. He was not afraid to tell anybody what he thought about anything, and we will certainly miss that voice out there. And again, like I said, the UFO field has certainly lost its shining star. And we've got one more piece of news here. And this is just so zany, so weird. I got wrapped up in reading about all of this over the weekend. Probably half the day Sunday, I read all this stuff. And just weird stuff that goes on at this thing. But the International Academy of Astronautics held its sixth conference that wrapped up back on May 3rd of this year. And according to the conference website, the about this conference, it says, the quote, the biannual conference brings together world experts to discuss the threat to Earth posed by asteroids and comets and actions that might be taken to deflect a threatening object, unquote. And I don't know. Every time I hear about that, I always think of Bruce Willis and Batman up there. Trying to blow up an asteroid while Liv Tyler cries and her dad sings in the background, you know, and I don't know, Armageddon. And then there was a bunch of spinoffs too, but I don't know. I always think about that whenever I hear about asteroids and stuff getting blown up in space. But anyway, during the conference, they ran a hypothetical near Earth object Earth impact event scenario, which is kind of a big deal. You know, they made a movie, a few movies about that actually, but it is a pretty big deal. I mean, ask the dinosaurs about that. It was a pretty big deal for them. Unfortunately, they're not around unless you count chickens and sparrows, I guess, are supposedly dinosaurs. What's left of them. Anyway, they back in 2013, so this is a biannual conference, so they did 13, 15, 17, and this year for 19. So four different conferences, they held different ones. So back in 2013, the IAA decided to conduct a mock scenario of a near-Earth object that eventually had a high impact percentage. So they just kind of created a story. They created a fake rock in space, gave it a fake name, and said, hey, everything's good. But then they looked at, through time, how that would have gotten closer and it would have become a bigger deal here on planet Earth. So during the scenario, they looked at a large number of factors that would have to be considered to manage the threat. Manage that threat not only in the sky. You know, how do we attack this thing? What do we do? How do we shoot lasers at it? Do we fire rockets? Do we send Bruce Willis up there? What do we do? How do we attack this thing? Nuclear weapons, not really something that people want to see happen, but it's on the list. And it forces people to think outside of conventional wisdom. And it's one thing to sit around and brainstorm these things and talk about, hey, how can we knock a big rock out of the sky? But when you're presented with this as a group and we have to quickly come up with a pathway to it, it kind of just changes everything. And that's what these scenarios are for, to get people actively thinking, actively talking, and put them in that position and see how they react. And again, 2013 was the first time they did this. And looking at not only how to attack the thing in the sky, but also to minimize the political damage down here on the surface, as well as the potential loss of life. And the whole goal of this, you know, this was during a conference. So they didn't really want to take away from the conference. You know, I was thinking about this actually yesterday. I was kind of brainstorming in my mind about some of the points of this story. And I thought about it. If you go to a regular, like a ghost convention, a lot of these ghost conventions will have a ghost hunt on one night or both nights or whenever. So it may take place in one of these places, but after the event is over, you gear up and you hit the lights and you go running around in the dark with flashlights looking for ghosts. And it doesn't encompass the entire time of the convention. It's just another aspect of it. It kind of it's something people are talking about. And it's just, it takes up a little bit of time for that conference. And I think you kind of, I can't believe I just said compared it to a ghost hunt, but it's similar in that it didn't want to take up too much time with these conventions or these conferences with this, but it's a serious thing that they did want to kind of put out there to see how all the scientists gathered would react and maybe some of the input that could be given. And 2015, they did it again, where they had a large object. This time it was broken into two pieces, with the larger piece missing the Earth, but a smaller piece was to land in Bangladesh. And they looked at a variety of things to consider that the news would affect, as well as how to approach various aspects of the threat and impact. And with this one, they got a little bit more into public fear, how the general public would react to this. What kind of news do we tell people, and how do we tell them? You know, do we use percentages? Do we use words like imminent, impact, death, total destruction, you know, all these different things. And the last conference in 2017, they had a scenario of a large impact that was imminent for hitting China. And again, 2017, but they forecasted it up to 2027. And what they did was they changed the game. So they would have it would kind of start like real time. It would start now. They would have a press release and say, well, you know, it's 1 in 500,000 chance. And then year to year, they would find more evidence, find more information about this. And it would slowly put itself into harm's way. And they would have to figure out, you know, at what point do we do something? And when we figure out what we're going to do, how do we do it? When do we do it? And how does that affect the world? And who's going to have input on this? And when you put it over different countries like that, then there's going to be different people that are going to want to chime in on it. And this mock test in 2017 was geared toward how to proceed and how the communication would flow. So who would get what information, and how would we communicate that between everybody? And so, you know, a lot of information just going around in these conferences, and hundreds of people are at these events. And so there's, you know, they actually do a press release at the end of each night that they do this. They're three, four nights. So they go through a few years every night, and then they hold a press release and they start all over again the next day at some point during the conference afternoon. So that one, they destroyed the threat with nuclear weapons used in space. It was successful, I guess. And this year came an exercise from a new fictitious event. The scenario started like the couple before, with a non-threatening object suddenly becoming in line for a direct strike. And in years past, this conference was in the United States, I want to say 3 years ago, and it's been, I think it was in China the 1 year. It was, they were actually talking about China, but back in the United States again this year. This time, the object was determined to ultimately land over Denver, Colorado, and unfortunately would have unsurvivable conditions due to the size of the meteor. So it would break up. It would basically detonate over Denver, and it would just instantly fry everything. You know, it would just bake everything. Grains of sand would explode, and nobody could survive it, even underground. You know, it would just level everything. Not good. Not good at all. The decision was made to deflect the object using spaceships. Spaceships. I don't know what kind of spaceships. They just said spaceships, which it did work in their scenario. But unfortunately, a 200-foot-long piece of debris broke off the initial object, and the rest of the major portion was directed back out into space. But this 200-foot-long piece of debris was headed for New York City, with just 10 days prior to impact. So the outcome of the exercise was not good. We lost some people in New York City, apparently. I guess Long Island was mostly unaffected, but Manhattan probably looked like Independence Day. Without the aliens and getting sick and Will Smith flying a jet. And Randy Quaid flying a jet, I guess. The outcome with the exercise, yeah, was not good. But the experience with dealing with a number of pieces of information and having to deal with the public and government officials, it's paramount. If this were to ever happen in real life, this is great practice. Getting a variety of scientists together. They're trying to get more actual politicians involved in this. Instead of making decisions based on what they think would happen or what could happen and looking at odds and things. This threat is real. You know, we don't really think about it too often. We hear these stories, a lot of fake stories in the news that talk about, oh, it's going to land and we're all going to die. And I'm pretty sure that NASA would tell us. You know, they're going to talk about things that are coming close. And, you know, if anything is super large, we're actually going to see it long before it hits us. So they can't hide it from the general public. It's impossible because we're going to see this object in the night sky. And eventually, we'll actually see it during the day if it's that big. So NASA, FEMA, and other agencies have gained a lot of data with this simulation. And scientists involved can also walk away with experience in dealing with these potential threats. But the possibility of a large object ever hitting a major metropolitan city, even Denver. Sorry, Denver. It's extremely small. Due to the size of the Earth and the Earth oceans and other less inhabited space being so much greater. But the threat is still out there. And, it makes you wonder, and it's kind of spooky that they actually get together and they talk worst case scenario. And what are we going to do? How are we going to do it? How are we going to minimize loss of life? And what can we do to push this meteor or whatever the object is, in one situation, I think it was a comet fragment that actually was headed towards Earth. How do they deflect that? And every year during the conference, they do talk about different things that scientists have come up with, different ideas. So they're presenting new information, talking about finds and everything else. And there's always something to worry about. I mean, ultimately, eventually, the sun is going to swell to a gas giant, and we're going to bake. It's going to get hot. You think it's hot in the summertime now? Wait until the Earth starts, or sun starts heating up. That's the other thing too. The moon. If the moon keeps moving away from us, eventually, it could just like take off, and it's going to really mess things up here on Earth. It's going to mess up our gravity. It's going to mess up our seasons. It's going to wreak havoc. You know, heck, we even have our poles are about ready to switch. I mean, we don't even know. Nobody really knows what's going to happen with that. The sun could hiccup one day and send some solar flares our way that could destroy all the electronics on Earth. We could get hit by a meteor. There's a lot of things that could happen. Dinosaurs could come back. We could create bacteria that wipes us out and we all become zombies. I guess that we kind of are all zombies anyway. Well, anyway, with all this death and destruction, all these scary things in your minds, I'm going to leave you alone for tonight. And hopefully you can get some sleep through all that now that I've scared you. It's just food for thought. It's don't worry about this. Don't lose sleep over it because somebody else is out there watching the skies. That doesn't mean that you don't have to. And programming note, we are going to be off next week. So the Paranormal News Insider will be on hiatus for 1 week, taking a little break, a little siesta, a little vacation. So I will see you in 2 weeks, May 28th. But for now, keep your eyes in the skies, your ears in the woods, the hair standing on the back of your neck, and always keep your mind slightly ajar. And above all else, don't stop believing. For the Paranormal News Insider, this is Dr. Brian D. Parsons reporting.